We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hello, Lakers Nation. Welcome in. Trevor Lane here for LakersNation.com, your home for everything Lakers. This is the LakersNation.com podcast, kind of a bonus episode here. Typically, you podcast listeners kind of are in the rhythm now by this point of the offseason. What we do is we record live Monday nights, Wednesday nights, and Friday afternoons. And some of you, of course, come and join us during those live shows over on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever it is that you catch the show. Other people just listen to the podcast version, which means they typically listen on Tuesdays, Thursdays, or Saturdays. No live show tonight, so I'm not going to be doing a typical question and answer format, but there's some topics going on in the world of the Los Angeles Lakers that I wanted to talk about. And I also wanted to put out a video that I did earlier today being Tuesday. I want to put that out in a podcast format as well, because it sums up a lot of my thoughts about the Lakers guard position and where I see them going this summer, the skill sets they need to look at, how Austin Reeves might fit in, should Russell Westbrook be on his way out the door. So I'm going to include that at the end of this episode. So that's going to be in here as well. But first, I need to talk about three big topics here. And this is a Zach LaVine to the Lakers rumor I need to get into, Phil Jackson getting involved in the coaching search, and some things that LeBron has been doing on social media. So those are the big topics. Before I dive into them, first, quick reminder, we really appreciate everybody who's taken the 30 seconds or so that it takes to submit a rating and review over on Apple Podcasts. Truly appreciate it. Great, great way to help out the show. And again, takes a very, very small amount of time to do so. Or if you're over on Spotify, give us a rating over there as well, wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. Again, we really do appreciate that. And I love reading all the reviews. They are so fantastic. And if anybody wants to submit a question in those reviews too, I will answer those on the show. So again, check out that over on Apple Podcast. If you want to leave a question in a review, go ahead and I'll answer it on the show. All right, let's start things out with this Zach LaVine rumor. I've had probably a dozen people tonight message me asking about Zach LaVine and the Lakers. Can the Lakers really get him? What's happening here? Because there's just these rumors going around. And most of it is from a quote that is getting rehashed. And this quote is actually from 2 years ago. And I think a lot of people are just missing this. There's a graphic going around that's got LeBron and Zach LaVine together. And it mentions in the graphic that it's from 2 years ago, but I think a lot of people are missing it. In the graphic, there's a quote that says, "I would love to go out there and play with LeBron." That's Zach LaVine in 2020 talking, not Zach LaVine right now. Yes, Zach LaVine is heading for free agency, but logistically, I don't see him coming to the Los Angeles Lakers. And look, I think if the Lakers had cap space to spend, sure, he'd be an option. And it would be a great story, the UCLA guy coming back home, all of that kind of stuff. I know Lakers fans like him. I've had his name being brought up in rumors for years now since I've been doing this. But unfortunately, and I hate to burst the bubble here, it's a quote from years ago. I think people are taking that and running with it and just, you know, getting excited and thinking that it's current. It's not. And then they're thinking that there's still a way to make this happen. And there's really not. And look, Zach LaVine may have interest in becoming a Los Angeles Laker. Crazy things happen in the NBA sometimes. So never say never, But it would take some really ridiculous scenarios for it to play out that way. So Zach LaVine is a free agent. Let's just go down this path for a moment. Let's say, for whatever reason, the Chicago Bulls want to send Zach LaVine. They decide they want to trade him. And Zach LaVine says, I will only play for the Lakers, and I'm a free agent, and that's where I want to go. And everything works out, right? You want Zach LaVine to be a Laker. The Lakers want Zach LaVine. Great. Problem is, the Lakers have no cap space. So in order to make cap space, in order to sign Zach LaVine, you've got to do something. That means you've got to probably waive and stretch Russell Westbrook's salary. But how much cap space does that really free up? None. Even if you get Russ to decline his player option, that doesn't really free up that much cap space. Only about 15-ish million, somewhere in that range. That's a very rough figure, but somewhere in that range, not nearly enough to sign Zach LaVine. He's not taking a pay cut. He's not going to come play for $15 million. He's certainly not going to come play for like the mid-level exception or something like that. So you don't have cap room to go sign Zach LaVine. So that means you need the Bulls to help. You need the Bulls to send him to you in a sign and trade. Problem is, with the guys the Lakers have under contract right now, the salaries on the books, they would hit the hard cap. If you take in a player in sign and trade, it triggers a hard cap. We've talked about this for the last few years, the last few off seasons. If you do this, it triggers that hard cap, and the Lakers have so many salaries on the books already that they wouldn't be able to fill out the rest of their team. You cannot pass that hard cap number, and that's the problem the Lakers would be looking at. So in order to logistically make a Zach LaVine trade happen, here's what you would have to do if you're the Lakers. This is just about the only way to make this work. You would have to, first, waive and stretch Russell Westbrook. Maybe you get to buy him out. Maybe he gives back a little bit of money. But regardless, you're going to have somewhere in the range of 13 to 16 million dead money sitting on your books. Okay? You're clearing out, though, the whatever is left over, about 30 million or so, because his full contract is $47 million. So you're freeing up about that much money on your books in order to try to create space between what your salaries are and what a hard cap would be at from taking in Zach LaVine. But then you got to think about trading for Zach LaVine, because a sign and trade, you got to send stuff back. Are they doing it for THT and Kendrick Nunn? No, they're not doing it for that. And the numbers don't quite work with that. So then where do you go? It's not Russ, because you had to waive him just to make it so that you wouldn't hit that hard cap. Remember, if you just did Russ for Zach LaVine, let's say for some reason you were inclined to do that and the Bulls were inclined to do that, you're still so high in salaries that you're probably going to hit the hard cap. Now, look, maybe there's some crazy gymnastics you can do in order to offload THT and Kendrick Nunn and not take any salary back, and you do a Russ for Zach LaVine swap. Okay, you can do some gymnastics there and try to make something work, but the bottom line is the Bulls probably don't want Russell Westbrook anyway, especially not in a Zach LaVine swap. So where does that leave us? Waiving Russell Westbrook and probably trading Anthony Davis to the Bulls for Zach LaVine. If you're the Lakers, do you do that? No, you don't. I know Anthony Davis. There's a lot of Lakers fans who've been frustrated with him. And I understand injuries are not fun and availability can sometimes be the best ability and all of those things that we want to say. But Anthony Davis, when he's healthy, is a better player than Zach LaVine. He just is. And that's not me hating on Zach. I like Zach LaVine a lot. But I don't think it's a hot take to say Anthony Davis is better than Zach LaVine. So why would the Lakers do that? Again, that's the lengths you would have to go to. You would have to have dead money sitting on your books in Russell Westbrook. You'd have to waive and stretch him and give up Anthony Davis in order to make it work. Okay, so again, never say never in the NBA. Is it possible? Could the Lakers execute a sign and trade for Zach LaVine? Sure, they could. Is it realistic given the things they would have to do in order to do it? No, it's not. So again, I've got a lot of people running around fired up about a Zach LaVine trade. Again, the quote is old. I think a lot of people are missing that it is an old quote. And logistically, the Lakers just don't make sense as a landing spot for Zach LaVine. It's part of the reason why I don't know how worried the Bulls should really be about Zach LaVine talking about wanting to explore free agency and all of that. What teams out there can he go to? Is he going to join the Detroit Pistons? Probably not. The Orlando Magic? Probably not. The teams that have cap space right now are not desirable teams for Zach LaVine to go to. Most likely, and look, again, Things happen in the NBA. Sometimes unforeseen things go down. A team makes a big move and suddenly they have cap space. Not saying that this is a lock, but most likely what's going to happen is this summer, Zach LaVine is going to re-sign with the Chicago Bulls because he wants to win, because they can pay him and offer him the chance to do that. The other teams that can pay him most likely can't offer him the chance to do that. Maybe he's swayed by the San Antonio Spurs. Maybe DeJounte Murray mentioning that he wants him in San Antonio is enough. I don't know. Maybe Zach LaVine decides that. But I would, if I had to guess, I'd say he probably winds up back with the Chicago Bulls. Again, things happen in the NBA. But the Lakers, it's beyond an extreme long shot for getting Zach LaVine. It's just extremely, extremely, extremely unlikely to happen. So, again, I don't like being the bearer of bad news there. I would love to see Zach LaVine in purple and gold, but it's not going to happen, and please don't get fooled by quotes that are getting tossed around that are from years ago. Okay, moving on. According to Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, Phil Jackson is involved in the Lakers coaching search, looking to replace former head coach Frank Vogel, and Phil Jackson is involved in the process. And I've had a lot of Lakers fans commenting on this. Most seem to think this is a bad thing. And I don't know that it is. I'm not going to say it's a positive thing either. Here's the way I see this. So let's say you're Jeannie Buss. You're Jeannie Buss and Rob Pelinka. You're trying to figure out who your new head coach is going to be. That's your goal. You're trying to find a new head coach. You happen to know the greatest coach ever. Just so happens to be that you know the greatest coach ever. And you're looking for a head coach. Wouldn't it be a little bit crazy if you didn't at least call him up and say, hey, Phil Jackson, since I know you, I'm trying to hire a head coach. You're the greatest head coach of all time.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's your opinion? Can you give me your take? Wouldn't it be kind of crazy to not do that? Right? Like if you had that kind of resource, it'd be like if I had Warren Buffett's number and I was considering whether or not to buy a certain stock, right? Wouldn't it be a little bit crazy if I didn't call him up and say, hey, I'm looking to invest my life savings. Before I do this, is this a good idea? I'd be crazy not to do that. That's where the Lakers are at right now. This is a big, big decision. Who's going to be this head coach? It's going to not just help determine whether or not they're successful next season. It'll help determine whether or not LeBron signs an extension. There's a lot on the line here. A lot. And if you know Phil Jackson, it's probably a little bit crazy to not use that to your advantage. So that's my initial thought. But I understand the fears that Lakers fans have, and Phil Jackson being very involved, when you start to hear him being very involved in the process, that's where people start to get a little bit concerned. So I can understand where on the surface it was just Jeannie called up Phil and asked for his opinion. Okay, that's one thing. Phil Jackson, though, getting involved with the actual decision-making process, perhaps getting involved at the interview level, right? And we don't know exactly where his involvement lies, but the more involved he gets, if it's Jeannie just picking his brain, that's one thing. If it's Phil is conducting the interviews, if it's Phil Jackson is the one ultimately making the decision, that's where fans start to worry. And here's why. Here's why. Phil Jackson, the greatest coach ever, but ask Knicks fans how they feel about him. How he did running the Knicks. Not great. Not great at all. Here's the problem. Sometimes your skill set in one thing where you can be absolutely fantastic doesn't translate to another thing. Hey, even in a related field, sometimes it just doesn't translate. I mean, look, we see this all the time in society. I mean, CM Punk is a great wrestler. Tried to be an MMA fighter. Was not so great, but amazing great. One of the all-time greats as a wrestler. Not such a great MMA fighter. And that's okay. That's okay. If I'm training to be in the wrestling ring and I know CM Punk, I'm going to call him up. If I'm training to be an MMA fighter, if I'm trying to find success in the UFC, he could probably tell me some things. But is he the guy I want to lean on completely? Probably not. Probably not. Kind of the same thing with Phil Jackson here. As a decision maker for the Knicks, it did not go well. It didn't go well at all. So the concern is, how heavily are you leaning on Phil Jackson? How much of a voice does he have? Because so far, when it's come to making decisions for an organization, he's got an iffy track record at best. And that's a concern for Lakers fans. And I understand it. And you look at this front office, and I think there's also some confusion. There's some confusion. Who is making the decisions? Are we in a situation where there's too many cooks in the kitchen? Who makes the decisions? Is it Kurt Rambis? Is it Linda Rambis? Is it Jeannie Buss? Is it Rob Pelinka? Is it Phil Jackson? Is it Magic Johnson? I don't know. Lakers fans, do they know? No. Lakers Nation, do you guys know? It can be a collaborative process, but still ultimately somebody's got to make the decision. And here's the problem with all of this. When you start to add Phil Jackson into the mix, I think one of the things that I really want to see from the Lakers this offseason, if I was Rob Pelinka, and I'm putting this team together, and I'm figuring everything out, and I'm trying to decide where things are going to go, and let's say that Rob Pelinka has sole decision-making power. I don't know if he does. I know there's a lot of other voices. But if I'm Rob Pelinka and I've got the ability to make decisions here on this team, what I want to do is I want to have a cohesive vision. By the end of July, I want to have a real concrete idea of what this team is. What is their playing style? How do we plan to succeed? I feel like this last year's Lakers never had that. What I'm talking about is an identity. And what can happen is when you get so many different people that are contributing their opinions and have a say, you wind up with a team that lacks an identity. You get a team that is part Phil Jackson, that is part Rob Pelinka, it's part Linda Rambis, it's part Kurt Rambis, it's part Jeannie Buss, because they're all having a say in this mix. Now, I'm hoping that's not really what the decision-making process looks like. I hope they're on the same page and things like that. But again, too many cooks in the kitchen sometimes can make things messy. There's a line from the TV show Parks and Rec, one of the early seasons. It's a character that didn't wind up sticking around. Mark Brandanowitz said that what you can make, what the Parks and Rec department made when they tried to put together a poster, taking all the ideas from a bunch of different people, is they created a camel. I never heard this saying before, but Mark Brandanowitz says a camel is a horse put together by a committee. The Lakers last season certainly looked like a camel. Now, I don't know if that's exactly what the decision-making process looks like for the Lakers. A lot of this stuff is happening behind closed doors. But I'm saying when Lakers fans hear that now Phil Jackson is involved in the decision-making process too, and there's trepidation over that, I understand why. And it makes sense why people would be a little bit concerned. Again, the track record with the Knicks, having so many voices involved in the process, it's concerning. On the surface, Phil Jackson, great coach. Of course, why wouldn't you ask his opinion in this? But when you dig a little bit deeper, you can understand why Lakers fans would feel overall more negative than positive about Phil Jackson being involved in this decision-making process. Again, hopefully, when the dust clears, the Lakers have landed on someone that they wanted and someone that has a clear and cohesive vision, and the roster they put together follows that vision. And by the end of July, we have a very clear notion of exactly what this team is and what they're supposed to be. All right, lastly, just real quick, LeBron hopped on Twitter tonight during the Grizzlies game against the Warriors. Great game, great series. Can't wait to see more of it. But he was very critical of Ja Morant getting the Most Improved Player Award. This is what he said on Twitter. Ja so damn tough. There's no way Ja should even be in the Most Improved Player talks. This guy is a flat-out star and always has been. Real basketball brains know, not the majority of dweebs who don't even watch basketball on those voting ballots. And then LeBron felt so strongly about this that he came back 2 hours later and tweeted again, said, like I said, Ja's too special to be in the Most Improved Player conversation, rising superstar. Okay, there's two things here, two things that we need to talk about. So first of all, LeBron saying Ja is too good to be Most Improved Player. I'm not going to say he's wrong. I mean, I took the same approach. On my ballot, I don't have an official ballot, but Keith Smith and I over on the front office show, we cast our ballots for our awards. Ja did not win the award for me. He didn't. And the reason for that was because I thought Ja was already too good. And to me, the spirit of the award is that it shouldn't go to a guy who goes from being a star to a superstar, or a high-level all-star to a superstar, whatever terminology you want to use. It should go to somebody who took more of a borderline role in the NBA and cemented their status. I look at like a Jordan Poole, who went from being a rotation player to being key contributor, borderline all-star level player. He's been absolutely incredible, right? That's more what I think of when I think of the Most Improved Player Award. Darius Garland, right? Who went from being a really good player to being an all-star. But going from star to superstar, I don't know. That, to me, it felt a little weird going to Ja Morant. But then, when you think about the award itself, that it's called the Most Improved Player. If Ja was a B-plus player and he became an A-plus player, I mean, that's a pretty big improvement. And Jordan Poole was a C-plus and he became a B, well, technically, right, Ja improved more. So on that level, I don't have necessarily an issue with that. I think you can make an argument either way. I don't think it's anything to be upset over. I looked at it the way LeBron looks at it and said, you know, you don't call a person the Most Improved Player when they are already a star and then they make the leap to superstar. But again, that's just how I've always looked at it. If you go by exactly what the name is, then I understand why people would have voted for Ja Morant. That's fine. But LeBron goes a step further. He takes the Most Improved Player Award and looks at it as though it is the 8th grade YMCA rec league team version of like the hustle award that a coach gives to the kid that just tries the hardest. That's the way LeBron is looking at this award, almost as though like Ja should be offended, should be insulted for having been given this award. This is not the case. This is the NBA. This is not 8th grade. This is the NBA. This is professional basketball. If you're the most improved at the NBA level, if you're in the NBA, you're already one of the top basketball players in the entire world. The best of the best of the best. And you get most improved in that league?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a huge honor. It's not a negative. That's not something that you look at and you take offense to it. No way. But LeBron looks at it as though NBA media has offended Ja Morant. And now, I am part of NBA media. And LeBron targets NBA media here. Talks about dweebs who don't even watch basketball. These voting ballots. Okay, I didn't have an official voting ballot, so maybe I don't take quite as much offense as someone else should. But to insinuate that NBA media is just dweebs who don't even watch basketball, and that that's the problem, that's the reason why Ja was given this terrible award, this terrible honor. How dare they give Ja this award? I think it's just taking aim at a relatively easy target, right? I mean, NBA media, that's not a person. It's not an individual who's going to necessarily respond. NBA media comes under plenty of fire, and sports media in general, media in general, I should say, comes under plenty of fire for a lot of different reasons. Some of them certainly justified. But here's the problem. The majority of dweebs who don't even watch basketball on those voting ballots. To suggest that NBA media doesn't watch basketball, right? Like that's the equivalent of the argument that I see playing out on Twitter all the time. What is it? If someone disagrees with someone else, particularly on basketball Twitter, NBA Twitter, someone disagrees with someone else, you know what happens? The one person winds up getting called a casual, don't they? Or this comment gets thrown in. Well, obviously, you don't even watch the games. That's what we see the argument devolve into, usually. That's what I see on Twitter. The argument devolves into, oh, well, clearly you don't even watch the games. That's the way to dismiss the other person, to say that their opinion is not valid because clearly they don't even watch the games. They're casual. LeBron is saying that people who do this professionally, this is their job, is to cover the NBA. Clearly, they don't watch basketball. That goes, in my mind, a step too far. Obviously, I'm part of NBA media. I said it before. But I know a lot of people in NBA media. I don't know a lot of people in NBA media. I don't know any people who don't work extremely hard, who don't watch a ridiculous amount of basketball. It's physically impossible over the course of a season to watch every single game. It's just not humanly possible. So the bottom line is that we're talking about two different arguments here. If LeBron says the most improved player award, Ja Morant shouldn't qualify for that. It shouldn't be a guy who's already a star, should not get that. Okay, sure, I can get on board with that. I can see other people saying, no, that's not how I look at it. And that's fine. I think that's open for discussion. And I think LeBron could make a point, and I think I actually probably agree with him, that I would prefer not to see the Most Improved Player Award go from a guy who makes the leap from superstar or from all-star to superstar. Okay, fair. However, that's not the point that LeBron makes. LeBron takes this as Ja was offended by this in some way, because clearly there had to be offense here for him to call the people who are voting on these things dweebs who don't watch basketball, when he knows that's not true. He knows that's not accurate. He's just taking aim at people to lash out because apparently Ja has somehow been, in LeBron's mind, offended over getting this award. That does not make sense. And I don't think that in this case, NBA media was a fair target. There's plenty of times where, let's face it, we are. NBA media is a fair target. It happens. But in this case, I don't think that was the argument to make. Again, if LeBron wants to say superstars, stars, shouldn't qualify for this award. They should be exempt from this award. That's not who should be targeted on. Okay, fine. Off you go. But this argument that LeBron makes here, I think it's taking aim at NBA media for no reason. For no reason other than just wanting to lash out here. Maybe get a cheap laugh by characterizing NBA media as these nerds who don't pay any attention to the sport itself. Probably never even picked up a basketball, right? Probably never played at the professional level, so therefore their opinions don't matter. I think LeBron was off base on this one. And again, part of that is, I'm sure, my own bias as part of NBA media coming into this. But there you have it. All right, I want to leave you with my thoughts on the Lakers, their guard position, and where I see them going from here, including the skill sets they should be looking for at the guard position if they do move on from Russell Westbrook. And can Austin Reeves be that guy? Again, this went out as a YouTube video yesterday, but here's my take on this. If you haven't seen it, I wanted to make sure I put this out on the audio format here on the Lakers Nation podcast. Hello, Lakers Nation. Welcome in. Trevor Lane here for LakersNation.com, your home for everything Lakers. Who will be the Lakers starting guard next season? And I'm talking about the point guard position. What do they really need to look for in that role? Because it's different, I think, than what we typically think of when we think of a point guard. And is that player already on the Lakers roster? I think he actually is. And no, I'm not talking about Malik Monk. I'm going to dive into it, but first, quick reminder, subscribe right here to the Lakers Nation YouTube channel. Ring that notification bell as well. And make sure you also go find our Lakers Nation podcast over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. All right, let's dive into this. So the point guard position for your Los Angeles Lakers has been kind of a mess the last two seasons. We've seen Russell Westbrook. We've seen Dennis Schroeder. Both of them similar in the sense that they are primary ball handlers. Their main skill is having the basketball in their hand and then doing things with it, whether that's driving and kicking, driving and scoring themselves, a pull-up jumper, whatever it is. They want the basketball to be in their hands. The thought process was LeBron James, he kind of needs somebody to take the burden off of him as a playmaker. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, or that is an incorrect thought to have, but I think we've also seen that definitively, when LeBron is on the floor, you're better off putting the ball in his hands, just period. You're better off putting the ball in the hands of LeBron James than you are Russell Westbrook, better putting the ball in the hands of LeBron James than you are Dennis Schroeder. Not a stretch, I know, he's potentially the greatest player of all time, but still, what we found is that these guys who get most of their value from being the guy with the ball and then running the offense, when LeBron's on the floor with them, a lot of what they do best is taken away, and so that makes it an awkward fit. However, when we saw LeBron in seasons past with a player like a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, like a Avery Bradley, Danny Green, even go back further, talk about Mario Chalmers, players like this who instead get most of their value by being at most a secondary initiator. For the most part, they're used in almost a 3-and-D style role where they defend at a high level, shoot at a high level, can make teams pay when they're paying too much attention to LeBron James, and then can act as a secondary initiator as well in terms of putting the ball on the floor and attacking. I think that's the kind of guy that actually thrives alongside LeBron James. And I understand, again, the sentiment behind finding a guy that can take some of the burden off of LeBron, but it's just been clunky at best for a couple of seasons now. So, assuming the Lakers do find a way to part ways with Russell Westbrook, whether it's via trade, via buyout, whatever happens, who knows? Maybe Russ doesn't pick up his player option. We can dream, right? But whatever happens, assuming Russell Westbrook is not on the Lakers roster next year, I think you take a cue from what has worked in the past. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't want another ball handler on the roster. I think you do. I think that there's going to be games that LeBron misses, and you're going to need someone else who can handle the basketball for you. However, you've got to find a person with the right mentality. You've got to find somebody who looks at the game of basketball not in terms of what can I do to get my numbers, but instead, what can I do to help the team? What can I do to make sure that we get this win. And that, I think, is going to be extremely important because you need somebody who is in what I consider to be a Derek Fisher-esque role. He's the first guy I think of when I think about this. A guy who can initiate the offense when need be. When your main offensive force is off the floor, they can be the guy handling the basketball, but they're also perfectly fine spotting up and being a secondary creator for your offense. That's what Derek Fisher was to Kobe Bryant, who acted as the primary initiator for the Lakers offense. And the guy on the Lakers team that I'm looking at right now to fill that role, again, I said it's not Malik Monk. Offensively, Malik Monk can do that. But defensively, that's a bit more of a mixed bag. And I think Malik is best suited for the six-man scorer role. I recently ran a couple of polls on Twitter as well as Instagram, and Lakers fans largely backed me up on this, seeing Malik Monk ideally as a sixth-man microwave scorer. And don't get me wrong, he is great at that. Would love to see him in that role. But no, in terms of the starting guard spot, I'm looking at our guy, Austin Reeves. I think his skill set makes a lot of sense. Now, I do want to caution this. I don't want to hype Austin Reeves too much here to the point where we come into next season with expectations that are just through the roof. The bar is set so high that he can't possibly live up to them. That just creates a difficult situation. So take this with a little bit of a grain of salt, but think about the skill set that we've talked about so far that the Lakers need in a starting guard. Austin Reeves makes a ton of sense. Again, can operate on or off the ball. On the ball, actually is really, really good in pick and roll situations. In fact, per synergy, big thanks to my guy Sean Davis, Austin Reeves is in the 91st percentile scoring out of the pick and roll as a scorer. In fact, on a points per possession basis, Austin Reeves already ranks higher than Russell Westbrook in pick and roll situations, which is supposed to be Russ's bread and butter. But Reeves has already surpassed him in that category, even though it is on lower volume. He can also distribute. We've seen he's got great vision. We know that he can pass the basketball. He also does a really nice job competing on the defensive end of the floor. Does he get blown by on the perimeter at times? Sure, that does happen. But he also competes to get back in the play. He's hyper aware of things that are happening off the ball. We see him contesting at the rim. When he does get beat, he often recovers and tries to swipe down to get a steal. There's things to work on there. I'm not saying it's perfect, but he's competitive enough on the defensive end of the floor, and he does a solid enough job to where I think that he checks that box to a greater degree than a player like, say, Malik Monk. I don't think that's a stretch to say that. Now, in preparation for this video, I reached out to Aaron Riley of AMR Sports, who is Austin Reeves' agent, and floated the idea of what about Austin being a lead ball handler next season in a LeBron James offense. Again, understanding that realistically, if you are nominally the point guard in a LeBron James offense, LeBron's going to have the ball most of the time. And so I asked him whether that was something that Austin was preparing for this summer. And he said that they're very confident in Austin's playmaking abilities as is. They believe that he just needs more reps, more opportunity, that his vision is great, his ball handling they're not concerned about, that they believe that he will be ready to slide into that type of a role if that's what the Lakers ask of him. Instead, they're working on two things this summer to prepare for next season. And those two things are, number one, a strength and conditioning program at the NBA level. We've seen instances where we look at Austin Reeves and you think, man, if he was a little bit stronger, he wouldn't have gotten bumped off the spot there on defense. And so that's something that they're working on. Again, that's not something that is uncommon for a young player. Most rookies have to add strength, and that's something that comes with time. So that's something that they are indeed working on. But then the other thing that they're working on is his shot. They're working to fix a few things in his shot. Shot 32% from three this last season. If there's anything that would give me pause about giving Austin Reeves a starting job next year in a LeBron James offense, it's the shooting. 32% from behind the arc is simply not good enough. What you need to be is at least league average. Just keep defenses honest. Then we're talking 35, 36%, and you're golden. Again, this is my biggest reservation about whether or not Austin Reeves can step into that starting role. And if he gets that shot up just a little bit, a few percentage points, and that will be enough to get the job done. You see, this is another thought I've been having this offseason about the Lakers and their targets in free agency. I don't care so much if a guy shoots 35% from three, or 40% from three. It makes a difference, don't get me wrong, but if you've got a player who shoots 35, 36% from three league average and can defend, I will take that player all day, every day over a guy who shoots 40, 42% and can't defend. I think we saw that definitively this season from the Los Angeles Lakers. You had guys who either could shoot and couldn't defend, or guys who could defend and couldn't shoot. Give me a guy who's in the middle ground on both of those things. Somebody who can play on both sides of the ball. And I think Austin Reeves absolutely has the potential to do that, particularly if he gets that three-point percentage up just a little bit. Like I said, they're spending the summer. They are working on that shot. If that comes around and he's a 35, 36% three-point shooter, you add that to everything else. You add that to his mentality, his mindset is exactly what you want out there. You add that to the defense, you add that to the vision, to the passing ability, to the ball handling. Heck, the double behind the back in the final game of the season for the layup to tie things up against the Denver Nuggets. Austin Reeves can do all of that and could potentially fill that role better than whoever the Lakers would go out there and find on the market with a taxpayer mid-level exception. Now, I'm not saying there aren't going to be other options out there. Maybe they can find somebody via trade. But in terms of landing a starting guard that can also act as an initiator for this Lakers offense, I think Austin Reeves may very well be that guy, already be under contract and on the Lakers roster, which is an amazing luxury to have, particularly to have found a guy who can do these things for you, and you got as an undrafted rookie last season. Great find for the Lakers, and again, I can't wait to see what Reeves is up to this summer and how his game comes along, because I think he could very well take over that starting job next season, assuming Russell Westbrook is on his way out the door. But Lakers Nation, give me your thoughts in the comments down below. Don't forget, subscribe right here to the Lakers Nation YouTube channel. Ring that notification bell as well. Till next time, everybody. See ya, and stay safe.